Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today. I'm Mike Blewett, kicking you off on your Saturday morning. Happy to have you here on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Excited to be with you for the next 3 hours. Along with my cohort, Kevin Walsh, we're going to take you around the world of sports. A lot going on, per usual, on this Saturday morning. We're getting ready to go with some World Cup action. Obviously, we have a lot of NBA news to kind of wrap up and comment on, because when last we spoke to you, it was the start of free agency. We were only about 20 deals in. We've gotten a lot further than that now, and we will continue to update you on that. World Cup, like I said, we'll do some baseball in the third hour. We're going to be doing some NFL as well. Might switch some of it over to the second hour, but we'll get into a little bit of Jake Seeley's bold predictions, which you can find on rotoexperts.com exclusive edge package. But Kev, obviously it happened a bunch of days ago, but you and I texted right when it happened. The bigger news, which is most people are probably sick of hearing about it, but the reality is it is huge news that Boogie Cousins went to the Warriors on a $5.3 million one-year mid-level exception. It seems like the market was soft on him because of the injury, which I understand, but I believe it is your stance that while the market may have been soft, he didn't have to do that for that kind of money.
Well, he didn't. He didn't. And I think one of the things that was really unfortunate is, I think, similar to Kevin Durant, DeMarcus Cousins was aware of how this looked. And I think that's why we immediately got the spin of he had no offers. But that simply wasn't true. He had an offer from the Pelicans. And he had one also during the year after the injury for 2 years, $40 million, $20 million a year. And I don't think that we could really say that DeMarcus Cousins was surprised at what the market was, because look at how quickly he made that decision to call the Warriors. So at the time, that was an incredibly friendly contract to DeMarcus Cousins that he didn't act on. And I think without question that if he made it well known around the league that he was willing to sign on for $10 million, which is double what he's going to be playing for this year, that he would have gotten plenty of offers. People would have figured it out, ways to get DeMarcus Cousins there. So I do think it's unfortunate, because it takes all of the excitement out of the DeMarcus Cousins decision. He was probably the most intriguing free agent, because we know that he's a top 15 talent, but he is coming off the injury, an injury that could severely impact how good he is. So you have to counterbalance the risk of being willing to give DeMarcus Cousins money. How many years does he want? He has to find the appropriate situation for him. So that it was kind of one of the more intriguing free agent landing spots, and all of the excitement gets ripped out of it. He's going to take his time to come back. He'll come back. Yeah. It might not be till March, and it doesn't matter.
So I understand what you're saying, and I understand that camp. But there's another camp that says, look at Boogie. He's going to have all the time in the world to come back. He's going to get his $5 million. They've now even increased their chance to get a ring in Golden State. He's going to get that ring. Then he'll be healthy, much healthier, when he gets back on the open market. I'm more in that camp. I understand it. Yes, he left some money on the table, but one, well, there's two components to it. A, he's an aging player. He's not old, but he's
27.
Aging.
He's in his prime, Mike.
Yeah, I get it. But he has put a lot of miles on it. We always have to remember that when we're talking about NBA players. I get that he's 27, but he has put a lot of miles on himself already. And an Achilles injury is a bad injury for a basketball player, obviously. So he's going to take this check. He's probably going to get a ring. And then he can be a free agent and go wherever the heck he wants. Now, if he starts like saying, forget the money, I just like it here in Golden State, I would be stunned by that, and I would say it's a bad decision. But given the fact that this market wasn't as receptive to him as it should be for his talent level, as you said, a top 15 talent, I sort of understand it. I also agree with you that it takes some of the juice out of the decision, but it sent shockwaves throughout the sports world that he would do that.
The thing, though, is we have to stop, at least for me, I just can't simply say, yeah, you know what, that makes life way easy on DeMarcus. Of course it makes it easy on him. The same thing with Kevin Durant. Going to the Warriors made his life as easy as possible. What if LeBron signed a vet minimum and went to the Warriors? We know for a fact that it would be the absolute easiest situation. I can make the argument about the mileage, the fact that his legacy, that he needs to add more rings so people will continue to move him up their all-time rankings. The fact that he played...
People would question his competitiveness, though, like they have with KD.
But that's the point. But no one would be okay. We're not going to open radio shows if LeBron goes to the Warriors and say, I understand it. It makes a lot of sense basketball-wise. Of course it does. Of course it does. But part of basketball, as with all sports, part of the intrigue is competitiveness. It's the anticipation. It is some level of uncertainty. Like, I know we had this conversation a while back, and you said that the NBA has always been dynasty-driven. It has, because of how impactful one single player or just a duo of players can be. But there's always there's still intrigue, there's still competition. When LeBron went to Miami, he didn't win year one. Year two, he had to win game six in Boston and then game seven in Miami just to make it out and get to the NBA Finals. Was pushed by those Indiana Pacers teams and went to the playoffs. He went there. He was there for 4 years. He came away with two titles. He was there all 4 years, but so things are shifting, and it's also shifting the math of what even makes people competitive. That's another part of this. Part of the reason, I promise you, that this DeMarcus Cousins market was lower is because of the Warriors, because adding DeMarcus Cousins used to mean that you would be now possibly a contender, a top 15 talent. If you can tread water and be in the playoffs by the time he comes back, maybe you can contend for a title. But the math is so messed up because the Warriors now have four All-Stars that if the Lakers, with LeBron James, added DeMarcus Cousins, nobody bats an eye at it and says, oh, that team has a chance to win a title. They laugh at it and say that they're a second-round exit because they've changed the math so drastically.
I understand. You're not a supporter. What I would say for Boogie is that... I understand his decision. I, as we talked about a little bit with Paul George last week, and I'll get to him in a moment, he's facing a little bit of basketball mortality. I think any player of his ilk, when he gets an Achilles injury, I think players know, like, that's one that can really hamper your career or put an anchor on the heights to which you may have soared. As you said, he's still in his prime, plenty of years left in his prime. But he's facing basketball mortality. He has no guarantees of a ring anywhere. He probably figures he picks up the one ring here, and then he's a free agent to do as he pleases. I do understand the blowback. I get it. It's one of these situations where, you know, sometimes I feel very strongly one way or the other, and I'm like, I can't believe that. You believe this or that or the other thing. I always try to be open to countering opinions, and this is one where I really do understand both camps. I just sort of lean towards the one where, like, I get it. You know, he's going to take it easy. He's going to take some time to come back. Maybe these guys are his friends. I don't really know the intricate relationships of the Warriors, but maybe he gets to hang out for a year, rehab, and then he comes back better than ever, and then he probably most likely leaves the Warriors and goes for big money somewhere else. So let's focus on the team that he left. Mm. Now, what does this do to the Pels? Because that was a team that that's the thing that I'm the most bummed about, because I'm just worried that Anthony Davis is going to get super frustrated and just want to leave. And then it blows up a franchise that did a nice job by drafting Anthony Davis and keeping him around and acquiring somebody. That's the fallout. That's the biggest loser, clearly, in all of this, not just because they lost Boogie Cousins in the short and likely long term, but because they may also lose Anthony Davis if he gets frustrated with the direction of the organization.
Well, that was actually, I think, one of the more interesting things that did come out of this. Is it doesn't seem as if Anthony Davis, because Anthony Davis has pull in that organization, a player of his talent is going to have pull on just some level of the decisions. And apparently he was not banging the table for them to bring DeMarcus Cousins back. It's not as if he told them to let him go. But I think that he might have had his eyes set elsewhere, because part of the reason that they pulled Julius Randle in is that's where AD was doing a lot of recruiting and that he wanted Anthony Davis there. And I think the Pelicans were a very interesting team in the fact that they got into the playoffs, they swept the Blazers out, they did lose to the Warriors in five, but I thought they looked good, as good as a team that could lose to the Warriors in five would look in that type of situation. They played some pretty good basketball without DeMarcus Cousins, and I wonder if, in a way, Anthony Davis kind of looked at that style and felt like maybe that's the direction that they should move. In a way, I wonder...
Julius Randle is a player on the rise. They're both Kentucky guys. They now have three Kentucky guys in the starting lineup when you add Darius Miller to it. Plus, they got DeAndre Liggins is on their bench currently. So, four Kentucky guys. I don't think AD and Randle were ever teammates, though, right? They just missed each other?
Yeah, they missed each other. Rondo is a Kentucky guy, too.
Yeah, that's right. So... yeah, so anyway, so there we have it. We have a bunch of guys. So there you go. They basically replaced DeMarcus Cousins with Julius Randle, which some people think is a clear drop-off, but they get a player on the rise, and maybe they can make something of this. Obviously, they still have Jrue Holiday there at the point. They signed Elfrid Payton, is that right?
Yeah.
On a short deal. Miritich is there.
Mm-hmm.
Keep going. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I think Peyton's on the minimum. There was a report that I saw that they were interested in Dennis Schroeder from the Atlanta Hawks, who are certainly going to be looking to move on from him. Although I didn't realize this, but I think he has some legal trouble that he's in right now, and I think that is making the Pelicans hesitate a bit on acquiring him. So that is going to be something interesting. I thought that they really did unlock something with Jrue Holiday playing at the two, so they should, whether it be Elfrid Payton starting at the one or a trade for Dennis Schroeder or someone else, I think that would make sense. The one thing that you can say for the Pelicans, right, is up until, I would say, at least January, February, Julius Randle is going to be a better player than DeMarcus Cousins because Cousins won't be on the court. So you take that for what it is for New Orleans. And if it allows them to play that super fast tempo, and it also forces Anthony Davis to play the five, which is obviously, within today's NBA, his best position, then I don't think that it... that was kind of one of the things where I didn't feel like the whole world crumbled down if the Pelicans lost DeMarcus Cousins. It's where he ended up going. It's a similar thing to actually when Kevin Durant left. It wasn't that Kevin Durant should have stayed with the Thunder. There's no obligation to stay with the Thunder. It's where he ended up going that I soured on. So that's just
why
kind of...
Why do you hate the Warriors so much?
I don't hate them.
Why do you hate the Warriors so much?
I don't know.
You sort of do.
I just don't know.
You spend hours on this radio program talking about how much you hate the Warriors situation.
Because I do. I do hate that situation, though. It's not as exciting. It's not. Last year, we had a two-team league. Like, that's not exciting as it could be. Because the reason is, I look at the state of this league, and if it is almost... If you take Kevin Durant and DeMarcus Cousins out of that situation, and you have what was becoming a dynasty and becoming an absolute powerhouse in that Golden State Warriors team, they won 73 darn games. There would be so much parity, I think, within the NBA that it would be so exciting. I just feel as if we were robbed of it. And again, it's not that they...
I understand.
But look, they don't owe it to me. But I do think that competition.
I get it, but the league has always been extremely top heavy. It happens to be even more so.
Right, but this is upcoming season. This is unparalleled, I think, at least within to some degree. Again, like they're
at least used to have a Lakers versus Celtics thing. Even the Rockets versus this Warriors team will be tough. I think Boogie has said that he has put the start of training camp as his target date. I think he's crazy if he steps on the court before the All-Star break.
What happened with that was his target. And then I think pretty much the Warriors said, like, we absolutely do not need you in any capacity.
Yeah.
And now he's not going to come back till he's 100%, which, again, I will say this because I understand why you're saying
27. This. He has to wait until he's fully healthy.
But this is something that is obviously, in the long run, it does make sense for DeMarcus Cousins. Take the ring out of it. The fact that he is going to go to a team like the Warriors, and now he doesn't rush back, and now he will take the most time possible to get right. Because this is an injury that typically people do not come back from and resemble anything close to what they were pre-injury. So I will say, at least for that reason. And again, I understand why it made sense for DeMarcus Cousins. But I think I can make the argument for all of these free agents that the best landing spot for them would be the Warriors.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, there you go. So you agree with DeMarcus. So we'll come back. We'll update you on some other free agency signings that have happened. Like I said, we'll do a little bit of World Cup later. We're going to do some MLB today. Bunch of walk-offs last night. It was interesting. Jose Bautista, where did he come from? Hits a walk-off grand slam. We'll talk a little bit when we come back about Paul George. I heard some of his comments after the fact. We didn't get a chance to talk about them last Sunday. So I'll talk to you a little bit about that, update you on my thoughts as to why he stayed in OKC. So that's it. NBA, NFL, MLB, World Cup, all coming up on Fantasy Sports Today. We'll be back right after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Back to FST. Thanks for joining us this morning. Whether you're listening to us on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app, which is free to download and free to listen, or if you're listening to us on TuneIn or iHeartRadio or a variety of terrestrial radio stations across the country, thank you. We appreciate it. And if you want to get involved, yell at us or comment on anything that we're talking about, please do so at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. Kevin is at the Kevin Walsh. And if you wanted to give us a call, you can even do that. 844-843-6879. That's 84-FNTSY. So before I get to some of the updates, I want to let you know that if you enjoy playing daily fantasy sports but are sick of dealing with professionals using algorithms to select hundreds of lineups and entries, try the Props Builder tool at mybookie.ag. Forget having to create multiple lineups and ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches and avoid experts winning 90% of the money. Invest in the players that you want without salary caps. And if you sign up for a new account using the promo code FNTSY, you can elect an option to receive a 50% deposit bonus with a rollover requirement. No more dealing with late lineup scratches, no experts to compete against, just you and the prop that you choose. So go to mybookie.ag, enter promo code FNTSY upon signup, and choose your matchups using the Props Builder tool. That's mybookie.ag, promo code FNTSY. So, first on Paul George, before we get some updates, Kev, I did see there was some sort of piece. I don't know if it was ESPN or somebody kind of did like a little mini doc of his selection process, and they filmed it at Russell Westbrook's house, which, by the way, all of the OKC executives were there. So this is obviously a kind of a planned event. It wasn't some big surprise, which I think we knew by last Sunday. But he said something in there that, and I credit Mike Greenberg for commenting on this because I thought the same thing when I was watching it live. He said that the Lakers didn't come get me. Meaning to me, and also to Mike Greenberg, that when he was in Indiana, he basically said, hey, I want to play for the Lakers. I want to go back there. I want to play for the Lakers. you guys need to trade me there. They didn't. They traded him for Oladipo, got some better assets, they thought. But the Lakers just kind of sat back, figuring, all right, maybe we'll get Paul George when he gets to free agency. But it's why you take the chance when you have it. And it's why some of these other guys that were on the trade market just recently, if you really want a guy, you need to go out and get him. And I feel like on some level, even if it's a few percent, Paul George was like, you know what? I told him I wanted to play there. Nobody called me. They did actually get a tampering fine, but they didn't aggressively trade for me. They didn't land me. And that's why I'm staying in OKC. I'm also getting paid $137 million, but you get the point. We've talked a little bit about how he left money on the table short term, but honestly, long term, Paul George could end up making 7 years, $290 million from the Thunder if he gets an extension there. So I'm not really worried about the $41 million average there. But I figured I'd lay that out for you because I did think it was interesting that he made that comment that you didn't come, they didn't come get me.
So I think I was kind of thinking this leading up, and pretty much that comment all but confirmed it. This really came down to Paul George wanting to be recruited in a way. And I remember back when he went to Oklahoma City, and it was Lee Jenkins, and I remember I was listening to it on a podcast, and he wrote an article about it. But as soon as he got there, Oklahoma City was treating him like a top-level college or a high school player, like a top-level college recruit. And people have made that point that when he went to Fresno State, like he probably didn't get that. Like, you know, he didn't go to the Dukes, the Kentuckys, the Kansases. And I think that in his mind this whole time, he was going to go to L.A. And it was going to be, they were going to roll out the red carpet. And he was going to be the hero to save them. And it was going to be this homecoming. And everything what was going to kind of be this pomp and circumstance about Paul George coming to the Lakers. And he got all of that from Oklahoma City. They loved him. He saved them from the fact that Kevin Durant wasn't there. I think, right? And all of those people involved in Oklahoma City needed Paul George. And that's what he was expecting from the Lakers. Because a lot of people took a hit from that Kevin Durant departure. Sam Presti, Russell Westbrook, the people that all the way back then decided not to pay the $4 to $5 million to keep James Harden. Everything now was being put at another level, saying that they blew this, they blew this. So when they got Paul George, they needed to do everything to keep him. And I think he felt that. And I think that's where they won him out. And I think that's part of the reason as well that that report that the Thunder felt for a while that they had this thing secure, I think that's really what it was. They saw that Paul George, I think, got what he wanted out of it. And then that to me really is kind of what breaks it down. I've seen some people start to spin this, that people don't want to go play with LeBron, which I think is a little silly. And I think it's more so he was looking for the recruitment, the red carpet, and he got it from Oklahoma City.
Agreed. So I thought that was interesting and maybe gives you some insight as to, look, when some of these players don't go through that process during college, they want to experience it at some point during their careers. There's a lot of late bloomers in all kinds of sports, and you see it in all of these guys during free agency. Now, Kirk Cousins was obviously a good quarterback coming out of high school. He ends up playing at Michigan State, but, you know, he's a mid-round draft pick. He's on the bench, and then Washington franchises him and doesn't really allow him to go out into the marketplace. And when he finally did, it wasn't a crazy situation, but he got wined and dined by Minnesota. There's a fascinating story on ESPN about that as well, like what Rick Spielman went through in order to do that and how he was working on multiple deals as he's even out to dinner with Kirk Cousins and his wife and all this other kind of stuff is pretty interesting stuff. But nonetheless, these players want to go through the recruiting process during free agency. Somebody like LeBron is eschewed it, basically, at this point. But I understand why these players want to go through that. But it's maybe a little bit of insight as to Paul George's decision. So a few other guys that have signed, I'll let you comment. We'll go rapid fire because there's a few. So I guess the highlight is that Carmelo Anthony is going to be bought out by Oklahoma City. It's going to save them upwards of $100 million in penalties and luxury tax and the like. We knew this was going to happen. any rumors as to what his most likely landing spot could be now? Is he going to L.A. to hang with LeBron? Where does he go next?
It looks like the three teams in the race have his three best friends in the league, whether it's the Lakers with LeBron, Rockets with Chris Paul, or he goes to Miami with Dwayne Wade. I think the Rockets thing still has been weird to me this whole time just because of what happened with him and Mike D'Antoni, but I guess maybe bygones be bygones, and that's on the table. If the Lakers situation comes through, although I wouldn't bank on that because the Lakers seem like they're doing just some specific things, like the fact that they apparently could have had DeMarcus Cousins and decided not to add DeMarcus Cousins, so maybe they wouldn't want a Carmelo Anthony. I think what would be best for Melo as well would be a situation in Miami because of their reputation for getting players in shape. And if he does want to extend his career, I think that would likely be Melo's best move.
What's the latest with Dwayne Wade? Was there an official signing for him to come back? I know he had some free agency or no.
Yeah, so no official word. I would personally be floored if he ended up leaving Miami. I think it's you know, whether it'd be Miami or bust, realistically. And I think he's gonna come back. There's been really no inkling that he isn't. But you know, Dwayne Wade is someone who's very much so already dabbled in, you know, the off court life and has a lot of different things he does there. Of course, with his wife Gabrielle Union, so it's in play. We're definitely creeping towards the end of Dwayne Wade. No word yet on that.
Yeah, I wonder if they just sign up to a sort of a team friendly 2-year deal. The problem is, this happened last time, where they wouldn't give him the money that they sort of promised him he would get, and I just wonder. Look, he's back there now. I think he's sort, you know, Miami Heat family. His number's going to be retired there one day, and all that kind of stuff. But you have to remember back to when they said that they needed him to take a pay cut and then it helped him out in the long term. That's why he ended up going to Chicago, which was obviously a flaming dumpster fire of a failure. But nonetheless, you just wonder if he's not going to give them as big a discount as they want him to take at this point in his career. But everything's negotiable. Yusuf Nurkic is an interesting signing because he's coming back to Portland. He's on a 4-year, $48 million deal. What I thought was interesting as I'm looking at the Blazers roster, he was a 16th overall pick in 2014 that gets the 4-year, $48 million. The other four starters, as currently slotted, were all lottery picks. They have 8 lottery picks currently on that team, former lottery picks currently on that team. Dame Lillard, CJ McCollum, Evan Turner, Al-Farouq Aminu, Nurkic was just outside the lottery. Then you have Zach Collins, Nick Stauskas, wow, Myers Leonard, and Georgios Papagiannis. So pretty interesting that they have 8 guys there, former lottery picks. But Nurkic, a good young 5 and somebody they felt like is going to help them in the future. But this is still a team that feels very buried in the West.
I have no idea what they're doing in Portland. I really didn't like the signing at all, the fact that it's 4 years. When they went and moved up to the 10th overall pick to get Zach Collins, who I think has a lot of potential, and I think probably fits the mold of today's NBA game a lot better than Yusuf Nurkic, who was pretty much unplayable within that Portland series. So I really didn't love that move, and I think one of the more interesting things is... and look,
not terribly expensive. I mean, I don't mean to throw $48 million around, but that's not a terribly expensive contract.
No, it's the years to me more so, actually. If it was 2 years, yeah. 24, or even 2 years, you know, 26, that makes a little more sense. But I think the fact that you have Zach Collins, and, you know, you would think by year 5 that he's certainly ready to be this team's starting and main big. The other thing that's interesting, and I personally take any Stephen A. Smith report with a grain of salt, but he said that he wouldn't be, or he is expecting, I believe it is, Damian Lillard to end up a Laker or a Knick. There's a lot of talk, I think, just surrounding the idea that they maybe would move on from him. And if that were the case, again, why in the world would Yusuf Nurkic be coming? Maybe that suggests that it's not the case. But there are some people saying that maybe if the Lakers made a real push at acquiring Damian Lillard, that it could be in play, because they are buried in this West. I wouldn't guarantee that they're a team that's going to make the playoffs. We've mentioned it many a times here. They were the 3 seed. That's cute. They were only 3 games better than the team that finished 9th.
Yeah. Everybody was way behind the Warriors and the Rockets. That can't be stressed enough, because those teams were battling for the fourth playoff spot in the final weekend. Teams that didn't even make the playoffs are basically battling for the 3 and 4 seed right down to the wire. So Lillard has expressed how unhappy he is, so I don't think that's the type of signing that keeps him there.
No.
At all. But who knows? They at least have him on not a crazy contract. But one contract that is an interesting one, as we can continue to update you, is Zach LaVine's 4-year, $70 million offer sheet was matched. The Bulls matched the Kings' offer, which I don't know what the Kings are necessarily thinking there, but at the same time, I never know what the Kings are thinking. I just got through telling you they drafted Nick Stauskas 8th overall. So Zach LaVine coming back to Chicago with obviously some protection for the team on his surgically repaired knee. He's an extremely athletic player, dunk contest winner, all that kind of stuff, but they need to make sure that that knee doesn't disintegrate on them and create a long-term issue. But nonetheless, Zach LaVine coming back to Chicago.
And there are actually protections within the contract against any potential injuries. So I think that might have probably been part of the reason why Chicago was so eager, or not eager, but I guess quick to match that offer sheet from Sacramento. Look, I think it's tough. I think that Zach LaVine has tremendous potential. He is an elite athlete who has shot the three ball pretty good through this point in his career. He is a horrid defender. And, you know, you have to just wonder, is he ever going to be able to play to the value of a 4-year, $78 million deal? And that's kind of been one of the things about this whole offseason, is I feel like teams haven't gotten a ton of value on some contracts. Like the Lakers signings, KCP for $12 million, Rondo for $9 million, Lance Stephenson, who was barely on a roster, somehow got 4.5 as opposed to a veteran minimum. And I feel like a Zach LaVine contract, like your best case scenario is him justifying the 4 years, $78 million. I agree. I have no idea why in the world the Kings were trying to make that type of move when they traded Boogie to acquire Buddy Hield, a shooting guard, and the fact that they then went after Bogdan Bogdanovic, who looked pretty good for them. I think he was the MVP of the Rising Stars Challenge this past All-Star weekend as well.
So team all-rookie.
I really didn't understand that move in any way for Sacramento. For Chicago, look, he was the centerpiece of that deal originally for the Jimmy Butler trade. The reason why I didn't know if they were going to feel it was necessary to match is because now Larry Markin is clearly the main piece that came out of that deal. And some people,
I loved Markkanen coming out of the coming into the draft. I loved him. I saw that guy play in person, and I saw him play a lot during the run-up to him being drafted. I really like him as a player. Other people have been critical of him, but he was a first team all rookie. I just think like they have a gem there. I don't know that he's going to be a superstar, but he could be a star player for a while.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the reasons I was wondering if they would maybe be willing to move on. I think another thing is, and you're going to hear it a lot, the 2019 offseason, a lot of people are going to have their eyes towards. The cap is supposed to go up. Teams are going to get their money back. There's a lot of free agents out there that are going to be attractive, and they're going to command max contracts. There are real max players that are coming up in 2019, coupled with the fact that I think a lot of people feel like the upcoming season has already been determined as who's going to be the champion. So the 2019 offseason, all eyes are there. And I think in a way, then, you know, attaching this type of deal to Zach LaVine, it can take you kind of out of the running for some of those names, especially a team like Chicago, who is in a bigger market and should be a team that can get meetings with a Klay Thompson if he's taking them. Or LaVine,
you know, only 23. That's the one thing you have to consider. He's only 23, sure. So that becomes a part of the risk too, right? You're risking on a young player as opposed to somebody that's a little bit older. The Kings are a funny roster because they have a bunch of guys that were awesome college players, and I'm not sure how good any of them are going to be. A bunch of them are going to be at the pro level, you know what I mean? Between Hield and Bagley and Justin Jackson and you know, Willie Cauley-Stein, De'Aaron Fox. There's a lot of work to be done for some of those guys. It could all work out, but I'm betting against a couple of those guys. So we're going to come back. We're going to talk about Tony Parker. We got Ryan Anderson, I believe, is another signing that we need to talk about. So it's Mike and Kevin on FST. We'll be back right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Talking NBA on FST. Keep running through some of these signings because we haven't, Kevin.
So we're back here on FNTSY. Mike will, I'm sure, hop right back in once we get that sorted out. And we're just going to go over some of the other deals that we saw throughout the league. We saw a pair of Spurs players sign contracts elsewhere, Kyle Anderson and Tony Parker. Kyle Anderson ended up getting 4 years, $37.2 million from the Memphis Grizzlies. He is a restricted free agent, so they can match. Some people were a little surprised by that contract. They felt like maybe it was a little too rich, just based on the fact that in today's NBA, he can't really shoot. But he is a do-it-all type of player, and I think for Memphis, he actually could be a solid contributor. And then the Tony Parker deal was probably a little more surprising, just because he's been with the San Antonio Spurs for, I think it's 17, 18 years at this point. But I guess, you know, part of it maybe was Nick Batum recruiting him over to Charlotte. He gets 2 years, $10 million from them, obviously the pair of teammates from the French national team. To me, the Tony Parker thing is just, what in the world is Charlotte really doing? What is their end game here? I mean, You've got Malik Monk, who you drafted 2 years back, who I think you really should be allowing to get some point guard minutes. You've got Kemba Walker there, who you really should be trading. He's on one of the best deals in the NBA, only making $12 million, but he's going to be a free agent next offseason. You bring Tony Parker in for 2 years, $10 million, and I don't think it's any stretch to say that Tony Parker is a shell of what he once was. And honestly, look around the league. There are questions about Tony Parker's fit in a locker room. So I don't know if you can really sell me on the idea of him being a veteran presence, a leadership, a guy that can groom young players. I'm just not super interested in that selling point at all. I just don't know what Charlotte's endgame is. Like, I look at the Eastern Conference. Could they be the eighth seed? They could. But is that what they're angling for? Like, I feel like they would be a team that's best off seeing if they can bottom out and build off Miles Bridges and Malik Monk and see what you can continue to piece together through the NBA draft, because I'm just not all too excited about the idea of Tony Parker and Nick Batum leading this team to a 7 games under .500 ninth seed. And I think the question is going to be, where do they move Kemba Walker? That's what you're going to have to start to factor in. Obviously, the move not being done yet, the fact that it wasn't done on draft night probably indicates that this could go all the way up into the trade deadline, or at least right into the season. I don't think that Kemba Walker trade would be coming at the moment. I just, you know, barring something crazy, I just don't really see that. Then it really comes down to, where does Kemba Walker fit? And I don't know, to be honest with you. I actually think that Kemba would have made some sense in San Antonio. I think him paired with DeJounte Murray would have been nice, and I still feel like San Antonio is a team, despite this Kawhi Leonard situation, would like to compete. So I think that Kemba Walker would make some sense for them, and they might have a chance to re-sign him, I think. Some people have mentioned the Lakers, but I think that they'd be better off moving with Lonzo Ball. So I don't see the Lakers as a fit. I think there were people who at one point mentioned the Clippers, but I mean, what's the move there? You just drafted Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So does that make any sense? So that's another thing for Charlotte, is how many teams does Kemba make sense for? And this is another thing that does come in a way, with the Warriors and with the math, is, you know, Kemba Walker's an all-star level guy. But does adding Kemba Walker put you over the top? Does it put you on a tier that now you can compete with the Warriors, or at least get to a level that makes giving up any type of future assets worth it? How many teams really fit that description? I do think one team that could be very interested in him come up trade deadline time, I think the 76ers could make some sense. Even if they ended up making him a super overqualified sixth man, the fact that, again, it's only $12 million, and I'm assuming they wouldn't be paying that full $12 million if they traded for him midseason, they have a treasure chest of assets. So I could see that getting done. And in a way, I do think that Charlotte would have been best to try to get this done on draft night. But they did not pull that trigger. So, Mike, you're back here with us, and I was just kind of talking about Charlotte. And
technical issue, folks, but yeah. So you were talking about Charlotte and the Tony Parker thing. Now, I'm sorry I was dead to the world there for about a minute, but I would say that first, I've always been a defender of Tony Parker, and I know this is an end-of-his-career type of contract. I think during this golden age of point guards, he's very often been overshadowed by guys that are flashier players or perhaps better individual one-on-one players, more highly skilled. I always thought Tony Parker got short shrift in the discussion of top point guards in the league, a former NBA Finals MVP, a really good, tough competitor who may not be as much of a good shooter, or it's good, maybe not the facilitator that Chris Paul is or the scorer that somebody like Russell Westbrook is, for example. But I always thought that in this context, in this golden age of point guards, I always thought that people overlooked Tony Parker. I don't think the Spurs did, but it was interesting to see that he decided to take it elsewhere. He seemed like a lifer. He basically was until this last two-year deal.
Yeah, I do think that Tony Parker perhaps could be someone that has been underappreciated maybe throughout this whole time. But I think in this situation, I don't love the addition for San Antonio, or rather for Charlotte. There is one deal that I do want to make sure that we talk about on the show, because we didn't get to it. It happened that Sunday night. Obviously, last time we joined you was this past Sunday morning. LeBron James is a Laker. Now, how surprising was this deal? Well, if you listen to our Sunday program, I bit very hard on the idea that he was going to be joining the 76ers because it came out that there was going to be a meeting between those two sides, but it ended up just being out of courtesy, and he joins the Lakers. And the question now is how much are the Lakers willing to give up to get Kawhi Leonard to be able to compete at a realistic level this year and actually compete for a championship? Because make no mistake about it, without Kawhi Leonard, there's no chance the Lakers win the title. Now, some people will tell you with Kawhi Leonard, there's no chance they win the title. And while I understand that sentiment because of what the Warriors are, because come the playoffs, they should be starting five All-Stars. I understand all of that. LeBron James last year had the Warriors dead to rights in their own building, game one of the NBA Finals with that Cavs roster. If you give him Kawhi Leonard, one of the few people in the history of this game that can actually cause some problems for Kevin Durant, it can start to make it interesting. And I think the length of Lonzo Ball can help as well on the defensive side of the basketball. Again, they will not, nor should they, be the favorites. But it is something that can make an impact. It can make a difference. And I do think part of the thing that we can talk, we didn't talk a ton about in the DeMarcus Cousins thing, is just what type of player will the Warriors get back? And I'm not doing this to try to convince someone that they didn't get a steal. They got a all-star level center, one of the 15 best players in the NBA for $5.3 million. They got him for nothing. There is no risk. But if he does not pan out, and DeMarcus Cousins does not come out to be the guy that everybody is somewhat expecting him to be, then do the Warriors going up against the Lakers plus Kawhi, is that now something you can talk yourselves into? And I believe my man Mike is now back with us. So, Mike, I was just kind of saying right there, I think that I understand that a lot of people feel like the season is over. But I would still argue if the Lakers add Kawhi Leonard through a trade, then they might have a chance to compete. I don't know how that would land for you.
I agree. I think that's the thing that gets it done. I think that really changes the landscape of things. I still think the Warriors are favored, but
yes,
that's pretty incredible. I mean, at the height of their powers, you're talking two top five players, right? LeBron's mm-hmm. best, and Kawhi, some people would argue two, some people would argue as low as five, but I think everybody's pretty much got him in there. When last we saw Kawhi healthy, he was right in the mix for second or third best player in the league, yes, along with KD. So that would be interesting. The Rondo thing was interesting. They obviously signed a couple of guys where people were scratching their heads because they're thought to be malcontents or what, like Lance Stephenson and Rajon Rondo. Like, what's that going to look like? What's that locker room going to look like? But I think when you have an alpha dog like you have LeBron, people fall in line, and that's the way it goes. If they don't, see you later, Lance, or see you later, Rondo. And maybe they'll be on national TV a lot, so Rondo can play his best ball when he's on national TV. We'll get more national TV Rondo. So, we didn't get a chance to talk about LeBron at length. So, when we left the show, actually, on Sunday, Philly seemed to be, you were all aboard the Philly bandwagon because they got a meeting. But as it turned out, look, I was thinking about this last night before I went to sleep because I figured we'd talk about this. You always take the meeting. Even if somebody tells you, look, man, it ain't going to happen. It isn't a waste of time for something like that. Even if there was a less than 1% chance that you could turn his mind, as long as it's above zero, you take the meeting. And that's why they took the meeting. But to hear Brian Windhorst report it and others, it was a two-horse race the whole time. It was the Lakers or he was going to come back to Cleveland somehow. And that's what it came down to. And I don't have a problem with it. Some people are pushing back on him saying, he's never going to win anything there. He might not, but he's going to try and build something there with either this young cast of players, a couple of whom people really like Kyle Kuzma, or they're going to figure out a way to get Kawhi and use some of these assets like Mo Wagner and Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo Ball, and whomever else to trade in the other direction to San Antonio. So we'll see. It's an incomplete picture right now, yeah, for LeBron in LA. So that's the way I look at it. This is just one week of several off seasons for LeBron in LA. So yeah, it's not a complete picture yet.
So on the point that this was a two-team race, it almost feels like it was a one-team race. I don't know if you had seen, they did that really big sit-down between the three main Cavs reporters, Joe Varden, Jason Lloyd, and Dave McTenamon from ESPN, Joe Varden from Cleveland.com, and Jason Lloyd works with The Athletic. And they are the three main reporters that have covered this team since LeBron has come back, and they know all of the stories. And they went on one of the local radio stations, and it was basically like, no one's left. All right, let's rip it apart. And they gave all of the information. There was a ton of stuff there. And I'll send you the highlights, Mike, later. But one of the things was that there's a strong belief that LeBron was going to go to the Lakers as soon as they won that title. Not that he was going to leave right there, but pretty much since that point, he was angling towards that move. And he actually spoke to one of the reporters frequently, the ESPN reporter, about going about all of these places in LA, restaurants, hotels, great places to be, because he used to cover the Lakers beat. So that was one of the interesting things, that it seems as if LeBron, you know, we've talked about this, right, Mike? He's very, very calculated. And he went to Miami because he knew he had to win championships. And then he went back to Cleveland because he knew he owed them one. And when he owed them one, he got it. He knew that there was a next chapter. And that chapter, I think, was associating himself with Los Angeles and whatever came with that. On the Kawhi front.
Yeah. It all makes sense, yeah. Right? I mean, the two houses and all that kind of stuff that we talked about, and his son entering high school there. It all makes sense. Like, it just happened. I said many times, it didn't mean that he had to move now, but it's fine for him to do it. I don't really have any issues. Some people don't like these guys bouncing around, but I don't mind it at all. He was done with Cleveland. He probably doesn't have the best relationship with the owner. He said what he did what he set out to do, and mm-hmm. he did it in pretty historic, incredible fashion when they came from behind to beat the Warriors. It doesn't matter that he needed Kyrie or Kevin Love or whoever else. He did what he said he was going to do. He obviously tried to get a couple of more. It didn't work out. Moving on. Thanks for the memories. It's always home to him. As he said many times, I find the hate of LeBron to be irritating, to be honest, because he's pretty clean-cut guy all the way around and a good role model for a lot of NBA players out there. So wish him luck, I guess. Just wish the team was better in the immediate future.
And I think, though, I kind of went through it the other day. I did a video that I put up on YouTube just breaking down this Kawhi scenario. And I think he's going to be a Laker. I don't see much of a path to it at that not being the end result. And I think the only threat to them is Philly. I don't think that Boston is going to want to shift things around. I think that they want to run back what they have there. And the Clippers just don't have pieces. Just straight like that, they are not in the race of trading for Kawhi Leonard. They do not have pieces. Philly has pieces, yeah. And they're the only team that it seems like, again, the Clippers, but they don't have the pieces, that it seems like there might be a chance that they would be able to keep Kawhi. But I think the sticking point is, are they willing to give up Markelle Fultz? And I don't think they are. And this might be crazy to some people. Again, we just said Kawhi Leonard, top five guy, went healthy. I wouldn't give up Markelle Fultz for Kawhi Leonard if I was that team. I'm not going to take the risk that Kawhi would leave to give up Fultz, who just 2 years ago was the consensus number one overall pick for a reason, who we have heard nothing but incredible things about this offseason, and now he's getting things right. And I'm not saying
it's
that
really just a year ago. It's just a year and change ago. Like, people are throwing dirt on this guy, but I mean, you don't love the mental instability stories behind a young NBA player, but geez, I mean, he's only 19 years old. Maybe he just turned 20. I'm willing to give him another shot, and I'm with you. While they have the assets to pull off whatever trade they would like, I'm not doing it unless he's already signed with me for a three to four year deal.
Yeah. Look, there isn't a player. There isn't a player in this league that team could not trade for. There's not a single one, but that does not mean that they have to do that. So, I do not think that it makes that much sense for Philly. And I think this Lakers thing is going to, or this Kawhi situation is going to drag out for a while. I still feel confident the end result ends up being him in LA.
Yeah. May very well be. So that's a real challenge for the Warriors, obviously. And the Sixers should just build it the way they've been building it and put themselves in position to acquire people if necessary and keep drafting good pieces. So Kevin and I will come back. We're going to switch it up, talk a little bit of World Cup at the top of the hour with England kicking off right now. It's Mike and Kevin on FST.